One. Good morning. I'm Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM. Today, I'm so pleased to have as our in-studio guest, Mr. Don Hollett, the founder and chief development officer for Wildfire Innovations, Inc., as our in-studio guest. Don, welcome to the program, and thank you for coming on the program to discuss the great technology and products of Wildfire Innovations and to discuss your views on leadership. Welcome.
Oh, hello, Darrell. Thank you for inviting me today. It's a privilege and an honor to be able to speak with you, somebody on the other side of the continent. So
that's right, because you're in Calgary, Canada.
Yeah, that's right.
And currently in Celsius, what is the temperature right now there, or Fahrenheit, whichever one you prefer?
Well, they're on the metric system, but it's above freezing. So we're enjoying the Chinook that we have right now, right after New Year's. It was super cold here, but typical Canadian winter. But we're around, I would think, about 40, 45 Fahrenheit. That's what we're predicted to get in today. So
yeah,
I can live with that.
That's a heat wave. So let's jump in. If you could share with our audience a little bit about your education background and experience, that would be great. And then we'll jump into the Wildfire Innovations.
Okay. Well, my background, I guess, I came up through the trades. I was raised on a farm. I was evacuated at the age of 10 years old from a wildfire. And to spring ahead about 35, 40 years, I was coming back from a trip in South Dakota, and I was going through Wyoming, Eastern Slopes by Sheridan. And I was pulled over on the side of the road and just taking a break. And I saw this helicopter coming with a bucket of water and to drop the water on the fire, this fire. And then he had to obviously go back and get more water. I'm going, wow, he doesn't have a hope of putting that out unless they get more helicopters. But the biggest challenge, I think, is obviously addressing the wildfires. And so something had come to mind that, wow, nothing's changed since I was 10. So I come up with this idea of the ARIS system, which is an acronym for the Elevated Rain Induced Solution.
All right. And was this part of your education that you went through university?
Okay, so if I jump back again, go back after being evacuated, I came up through, I went to different colleges and stuff. I come up through the trades, raised on a farm, so I learned to innovate things at a young age. So we were able to get crops harvested at day's end. If equipment broke down, we had to learn how to fix it. So welding was something that I started to learn at the age of 8. So I went to school after high school and became a ticketed welder, a Red Seal, which is known in Canada as I'm able to practice across the country. Uh-huh. And then I got into the pressure welding and welding different materials. I seem to have a good hand skill, eye coordination for it, and understanding. After that, then I became a certified welding inspector and a national construction safety officer. So the majority of my work experience was industrial. So you could say I'm industrialized, I guess.
That's
recognizing,
awesome.
Anyway. So that's my education background anyway.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about ARIS, E-R-I-S. Did I say it correctly?
Yeah, ARIS, oh. ARIS, yep. Yeah, and it's an acronym for Elevated Rain-Induced Solution. The system manages and can control the climate by timing the use of water resources to any prescribed area that is at risk for fire damage. I basically designed it to save live structures in the environment from wildfire. ARIS is obviously environmentally friendly. It's a revolutionary technology, I think, that will change the way threatening wildfires are stopped, prevented, and controlled.
And so where can ARIS be positioned or situated, if you will?
Pretty much anywhere in the world. I've spent almost 12 years working on this design, off and on. So I've come up with over 300 sizes, 8 different models at this point, with more coming out. And some that can be transported, then airlifted into place. They can be even placed in arid climates, like the middle of the desert. Not that there's too many fires there, but in Africa there is. I've thought about all the different areas that fires are a challenge, and looked into what is the biggest challenge for each area. Because, I mean, you can go from one city to the next and they'll all have a fire problem, but their challenge changes a little bit. So that's why I've come up with, I think I've got like 18 different models right now, and I'm getting set to launch the first one. So I've kind of kept it out of the public eye, and I got patents pending on that.
So, yeah, patents pending. Okay. Yeah. That was going to be one of my follow-up questions, that you have this patented. And so when did you start this venture, and what has been a battle for you thus far?
Well, the idea came to mind in 2008, like I mentioned, when I was coming back from South Dakota, and I was in the Sheridan County, northwest of Sheridan, on the east side of the Bighorn National Forest. And like I mentioned earlier, I saw this helicopter frantically trying to extinguish a fire, and it brought back memories from my childhood evacuation, also known as the Blue Suitcase Summer. So if I can touch base on that briefly. We had just come back from my grandparents visiting on the weekend, and I remember, I think it was a Monday morning or a Saturday morning, I was 10, shared a room with my younger brother, who was 7 at the time, and we were playing with our Hot Wheels. I still remember the Hot Wheel in my hand. It was a 1969.
Did you just say Hot Wheels?
Pardon me?
Did you just say Hot Wheels?
Yeah, Hot Wheels, yeah. So I remember this Hot Wheel. All of a sudden, my mom comes running in the room and throws down this blue suitcase. Donald, throw some clothes in here. Help your brother. We got to go. Yes. And she left the room, closed the door. And obviously, young kids, we didn't react too quickly. But about a minute went by, and I figured, I better go find out where we're going. We just came home from our grandparents the night before. And she said, she looked, she was almost had the suitcase packed for my sister. She was in my sister's room, and she looked to the right, and she looked again, where's your suitcase? And I said, well, where are we going, Mom? We just came home last night. She said, she closed up my sister's suitcase, said, take your sister, stand by the door. Don't go outside and play. We got to go. There's a fire coming. So that memory came back to mind when I saw that helicopter dropping that.
Yes.
So I started the idea in 2008 after seeing that helicopter, and yeah, it's been a battle. I mean, I've got about 20,000 hours of research and development into this, and understanding the costs and everything, and how they fight these fires. But the biggest challenge started with me in 2012 after a motor vehicle accident. I went through 2.5 years of spinal cord injections, a subsequent career change, followed by an unfortunate diagnosis in 2019 for leukemia and macroglobular anemia. But I prayed, and the good Lord has given me the continued strength and opportunity to actually hopefully bring some peace and relief to this world in some way, shape, or form.
All right. And so what has been the challenge in getting this launch for you?
I'm sorry. Can you speak up, please?
Absolutely. What has been the challenge in moving the business forward? Do you find that the communities that are dealing with fires are receptive to your technology?
Yeah, the biggest thing I think is cost. I've invested probably $400,000 of my own pocket over the years doing some demos. But to get in with the governments too, it's a long process because of all the levels of bureaucracy. And then they want, you know, they all pray for rain. And so I created something that imitates that, that nothing else on the planet has. And the biggest challenge is the government, they want this data. So I've got data, but they want third-party data. So that's okay. We're getting there. But the biggest challenge is getting in and showing them that this is the way, because we haven't manufactured my total setup system yet, but we've got position or models that are available that can be utilized in certain areas, but they don't understand that with my background and the technology that I've designed, no one's seen it yet, that how we can actually come in and set up a mile long of protection in a matter of a couple hours and cover an area that's like 4,000 feet in diameter. So the biggest challenge is going through all the grants, government grants. It's time consuming and the actual costs involved just to even do that. So yeah, anyway, right. But we're getting there.
Have you considered to partner with a university?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We've been asked to, if we'd like to be introduced to Arizona State University and a couple of other educational places in North America. So we're looking forward to that introduction that actually just came across my desk about a week ago. So we're just waiting for the response. Okay. Yeah.
There's an organization called CABI. Are you familiar with CABI out of the UK?
Nope, never heard of them.
Okay. So CABI, they focus on agriculture, and they're a global organization. And I think they will be very interested to talk to you about that, because it's all about bringing water to farmers. And okay. Yeah, I think that would be a great introduction for you. But moving on.
We're open to any introduction. We always welcome the people to the table and people that are here to make an impact socially, environmentally, environmentally, and obviously
the government. Right here in Pennsylvania is Penn State University, where my daughter graduated from, and they have a huge agricultural program as well. So
cool.
I think those are great opportunities for you. So what stage are you
at? Well, we've done some testing. Now we're getting set to, we're planning a demo in California, actually, as we speak. And hopefully we can get that off in the first or second quarter this year. The sooner, the better. That's the challenge with dealing with government, is talking to the right person who's going to make the shot. So basically what I've learned over the last few years is that you got to try to go right to the top to get any answers or any decisions, I should say.
That's true.
Yeah, but there are people that lead you to the right place, but it's just time consuming that way. So I think if I can get a demo off in a live fire, a picture's 1,000 words, a video's many more. It's just, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, we all pray for rain when there's a fire and there is none, but we can actually make it rain. We can bring the rain resourcefully by turning our system on. We've got a couple installs done in Western Canada at some remote fishing lodges, and they love the system. They say they turn it on and they actually use it for temperature control too. So they can drop the temperature like 15 degrees in 5 minutes when it gets too hot. They can wet the forest, wet their area. Then they don't have to worry about lightning strikes, because lightning causes like 60 or 70% of the wildfires that are happening. So the nice thing with the system is, if we turn it on for 20 minutes to 40 minutes, we can introduce enough relative humidity in the atmosphere, it'll actually start to rain naturally a couple hours later. It's almost like clockwork.
Yeah, how does this technology work? I hear what you say about you.
Well, it's just just an elevated sprinkler system that I've designed that can be mounted pretty much anywhere and placed anywhere on the planet. And we have a way of transporting water quickly over long distances in a short period of time.
But how does the technology create the humidity that will create the water?
Well, if I go back to the sea in the helicopter, what happened was it reminded me of being evacuated as a child, but also all of a sudden I get this vision of sitting in school in grade three. And I remember one of my classmates had asked the teacher, why does it rain? And all of a sudden my ears opened up. And how does it rain? And so she basically went up, wiped off the chalkboard, drew water across the chalkboard, drew the sun up in the corner, and she showed how the heat from the sun would come down and water evaporates. So it turns into rain. It goes up and then they make clouds and then it'll come back down. It's just a cycle. So basically what I've created is I've got protection above the tree canopy that covers an area that's insurmountable to anything on the planet right now. Some of the wildfire professionals and other people with ground systems predict that my system will actually have protection or keep fire away up to 2 to 3 miles away in radius, depending on the location that it's placed.
But within your system, what does it do to Mother Nature?
We just spray water out. There's no chemicals, so it's environmentally friendly. And the nice thing about being elevated, it really minimizes any erosion. So it's less erosive, but we basically wet from the top down.
Right. But how does your technology get the water?
Oh, we have ways of pumping it over long distances. Yep.
Okay. How do you initially, and forgive me, I'm just trying to understand, how do you initially get the water in the system?
Oh, we get it from anywhere, lakes, rivers. We even have units that are portable, so we have our own containment systems. But generally, we'll pull it out of a natural area. And the nice thing about that is it's great to have the aircraft. I mean, they can get there quick, and that's when they're most effective. But if they can't get there quick enough or there's too many fires, you see what's happening in the world. But the problem with even the small aircraft, they need at least 1 mile of water to come in and scoop water up and go back and load again. The governments have invested a lot more in the smaller aircraft because they're more effective. They can get in quicker. They can do more turnaround. The only thing is it's got to have a certain depth of water and it's got to be so big. And there's so many bodies of water that they cannot utilize that we can with our system.
Okay, but how does your system get the water into your system? So let's say I'm in a desert area, and I need water. What does your system do to attract the water to get it into your system?
Well, we have a line that just deploys it. We deploy it through a line, a long length of line, whatever the customer needs, however far they want to go. If we have to go 90 miles to get the water, we have a way to transport it, just like a water line.
Okay, so you're actually moving water from one area to another area with a pipeline.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. There's my misunderstanding, because I thought your system creates humidity, which will then allow you to collect water.
I guess it would work that way on a hill. But I don't know how much humidity or how much more water would make. But basically, we increase the humidity from a line that supplies the water.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you say you increase the humidity, how does that work? How do you increase the humidity? And, you know, because, I mean, open spaces, it's a large space.
How do we increase the humidity? Just by putting the water into the atmosphere at an elevated height. We're at such an elevated height and it's such a broad area that it covers. It actually reduces the ambient temperature, which in turn it's raised up by the sun beating down or the heat from the fire intensifies that. So if you take a drop of water, say the size of a dime or whatever size you want to use, and if you take it from room temperature to boiling, it expands like hundreds and hundreds of times. So basically it displaces the oxygen. So, and obviously a class A fire is a triangle. You've got wood, which is your fuel, and oxygen, and a spark, you got a fire.
Right.
If you could take any one of those three away, you basically kill the fire.
Right.
So I've got a way of wetting the fuel and taking the oxygen away in a large area.
Okay.
So it basically chokes the fire. So it'll, my technology basically, I know it'll stand up to any fire on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Like what you see where we spray the water is you think, oh, wow, that'll give you the coverage for that area. But it's actually way beyond that you don't see with the naked eye. And that's the change in the humidity and the temperature
right.
that will keep the fire away. Yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, where will Eris need to be moved?
Will it need to be moved? Yes and no. Like we have stationary and mobile applications, and you can use them whether they're for permanent installation or temporary. But we can prescribe to what the customer requires. Last year, I trademarked PMM, prescription microclimate management. So like we prescribe to what the customer needs, provide training, service, maintenance, and customer relationship 365 days a year. I never did like being an unsatisfied customer. If I bought something, they did stand behind it. So I don't plan on having one, but your systems are designed to virtually meet any requirements. They can be positioned in current infrastructure, such as sensitive forest areas or new and existing real estate developments. Some models are designed to meet emergency applications and can be readily moved to where they are needed. Wildfire experts, generally they assess an area prior to an installation or a fire. They look at all the relevant data, including climate, historical fire risk, insurance, and any other information that will inform the best possible implementation.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that each year, wildfires alone burn 865 million acres and result in, this blew me away, 340,000 indirect deaths, human deaths. That I don't know if they can even total nature, the deaths in nature, but they're fires are predicted to increase as much as 300% by 2050. So you do the math, it's like 10% a year.
Yeah.
In early May 16, a wildfire burned for 17 months and destroyed 2,400 structures, which caused $3.6 billion in damage, with expenditures totaling $9.9 billion once it was done. One fire.
Wow.
I don't know. Maybe you heard of it, or do you know where that is? Take a guess. Okay, that was Fort McMurray, about 6 hours north of where I live.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Thankfully, nobody died. But if you remember the Oakland firestorm of 1991, it caused about the same monetary damage, although it sadly took 25 lives.
Oh boy. Mm. Wow. Yeah. And so do you think that what is the cost to a customer? I know you have quite a few different models, different pricing, but on average, what is the pricing?
So it's basically based on how much coverage side they need. Coverage size they need. But if you had somebody that had a cabin in a remote area, you know, location, everything that's all factored in, but that would probably start around like 10,000. But to get into, say, like oil and gas protection, they would start, you know, probably around the 50,000 mark, depending on what they need.
Right.
But it'll go into millions.
Right. And so is that a one-time cost or is that an annual cost? And if not an annual cost, what is the maintenance?
Yeah, that's generally a one-time cost. And then obviously there's OEM, so engineering manufacturers, right? Warranty. There are parts that probably could break down, but they're generally maintained twice a year, usually before the season, maybe during the season, and then usually at the end of the season, just to assess everything. Generally, if you assess it at the end of the year, it's usually good to go the next year, but it's always good to do a test, right? But we license and teach people how to do that stuff. So, yeah.
And so, you know, it can cover, with the different size models, it can cover different size areas. What is the smallest area that you would want to sell? And then, of course, what is the largest area, which I'm sure the state of California would be interested
in? Yeah, just the smallest area I think we do is like around 80 feet or something. And then if you want to get into a large area, 4,000 feet in diameter, depends on the placement. Like if you, on one of our large models, if you stand anywhere within 400 feet, so 800 foot diameter on flat ground, in 1 second you'll be drenched. It'll wet you that much.
Right.
So that's why we can measure how much water is used or how much is required. And then basically we can, you know, if you turn that on for, depends on the area, 5, 10, 15 minutes, that'll give you protection for enough so nothing's going to ignite for 24 hours, give or take, okay, depending on the sun, direct sunlight, that kind of thing.
Okay. You know, believe it or not, Don, we're coming down to the end of the interview. Time just flies when we're having fun and talking about a very significant subject of fire protection with wildfires. How can someone get in touch with you to have a meeting with you, discussion, demonstration, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, we got a website, wildfireinog.com. That way, or you can find me on LinkedIn, email, don@wildfireinog.com. A number of ways. Telephone works best. Yeah.
And your telephone number is?
250-219-0485.
All right. And the country code is?
One. Same as you guys. Yeah. Yeah. And if I, for some reason, don't answer, leave a message.
There you go.
And I'll get
there
back. Yeah.
And what final thoughts would you like to leave with our audience about wildfire innovations?
Oh, well, we're starting a franchise, so we're looking to fire up a company in Wyoming right now. So we're looking for someone that might be interested in there. We have license agreements, depending on what they would like, different levels, gold, silver, bronze, and whatever they want to do. To answer your question, I guess a position statement for governments, agriculture, insurance companies, corporations, private owners who need human property and environmental protection from wildfire. The ARIS is a suite of elevated wildfire protection solutions that provides timely and revolutionary insurmountable protection size against all wildfires. Unlike competitors that use ground and aerial methods, our product provides the first climate-changing in a resourceful way that will even address ground fires safely against all volatile conditions anywhere 24 hours a day.
All right. Well said. And ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Mr. Don Hallett, the founder and chief development officer for Wildfire Innovations, Inc., as our in-studio guest. Don, I want to thank you for coming on the program to discuss this great technology that you have that hopefully will be adapted so that we can protect people's homes, people's lives, and of course, our wildlife, which is very important.
And our planet. Yeah. Yeah, the amount of carbon, like 8.5 megatons of carbon a year enters the atmosphere. So if we can mitigate that, that's going to save a lot of lives itself. So
right.
Anyway, I really thank you for the opportunity and for having me on your show, Darrell. It was great to meet you. Hope to meet you in person one day. I'm sure we'll get there. Anyway, thank you, and God bless.
You're very welcome. God bless you, too. Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps it up this week on Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. Have a great weekend, but remember, leadership begins with you.